Okay, so I've been loving going to Pilates lately. If you follow me on Instagram, then you already know. And I always leave class covered in sweat, feeling like all my muscles are on fire. But I learned recently that drinking water isn't enough to recover from an intense workout. You need salt. That's why I started adding a packet of Element, a delicious electrolyte drink mix, to my water bottle before class. It's packed with sodium, potassium, and magnesium to help me feel and perform my best. Right now, Element is offering a free sample pack with any purchase. That's 8 single-serving packets, a great way to find your favorite flavor. Mine is raspberry salt. Get yours at drinkelement.com/girlboss. That's drinkelement.com/girlboss. Hello, I'm your host, Avery. I'm the founder and CEO of Bloom, an HR and DEI consulting firm, and a big believer that work should work for all of us. Today, I'm joined with Liz, Girlboss's general manager, and Victoria, Girlboss's senior writer, who both co-produce this podcast. As you may have noticed, we're moving away from having just founders on the podcast because we actually want to have more broad conversations around women and work. In the Girlboss 1.0 era, the very narrow definition of success was to start your own business, and that's just not the case anymore. So when we do have founders on the podcast, we want people that are going to get real with us and share honest stories about the behind the scenes of being a founder, because otherwise most founder stories aren't that relatable to most people.
It's true. And that's what we love so much about Tori Robinson and Leah O'Malley's story. So they're the co-founders of Boys Lie, the cool girl loungewear brand that actually went viral last summer. I'm sure you've seen it when Ariana Madix from Vanderpump Rules wore their 1-800 Boys Lie hoodie, not so subtly shading ex-boyfriend Tom Sandoval. So I'm actually wearing one of their sweaters today. It says, obviously, Boys Lie for those who are listening. It's light pink, and I always get questionable looks from men when I wear it out in public, which I love. They've collabed with epic brands like Forbes, Uber, Revolve, Urban Outfitters, and PacSun, which solidified them as an industry trailblazer. In 2022 alone, their brand achieved $8 million in revenue. But going back to the beginning, Tori and Leah actually grew up living down the street from each other in the same suburban town. They never crossed paths, but in 2016, they were both going through a breakup with their boyfriends, who happened to be best friends. They formed an unbreakable bond and coined the mantra, Boys Lie. They spent their early careers honing their business savvy, with Tori working for her family's cosmetics manufacturing company and Leah working as an account executive at Yelp. Boys Lie actually began as a cosmetics brand in 2019 and then pivoted into apparel. Now they're best known for their perfectly oversized sweatsuits with empowering and slightly cheeky slogans. So I'd love to hear both of your thoughts on this conversation.
One thing that really jumped out at me is, Avery, you asked the question, how much money did you start with to start a clothing brand? How much money do you need to start a clothing brand today? And they said $250,000. It was a friends and family loan. Now, granted, it wasn't an upfront loan, like it wasn't all at once. It was given out over some period of time. But that's a really big amount of money. That's several years of salary for most people. So I think that just goes to show that, again, back to our conversation around transparency and not glossing over these headlines, is that's real money. And I think if you ever feel bad about having a good idea but not being able to bring it to fruition, maybe it's because you can't do a friends and family round for $250,000. And if you're looking to get venture funding, most venture firms won't even look at you unless you've already done a friends and family round. So that's just something that we really appreciate about how transparent they were. It doesn't mean that you need that much money to start a clothing brand. They do get into that as well. But what I took away from the conversation is it's actually extended their failure runway. They were able to make a lot of mistakes and then recover from them. So they started in cosmetics and then pivoted to clothing. That allowed them to do that. At one point, they alluded to spending $90,000 on a photo shoot. Again, that could put most people underwater, but they were able to bounce back from it. They were taken advantage of by PR agencies and vendors and wholesalers. At every step of the way, there was some kind of setback. If you think about it, that money just kind of allowed them to fail and learn and fail and learn again to arrive to where they are.
And I think it's important to acknowledge that multiple things can be true at once. This doesn't mean that they're not hardworking, they're not deserving of the success that they've had, or that they didn't necessarily work harder than other people. It just means that they had a little bit more room and a bit of a safety net to fail, which is really important for any person that's starting a new business or a new company or taking on a huge risk. And I think that another thing to acknowledge here is that there are a lot of people that are afforded a lot of capital, a lot of money that completely fuck it up. So there's something to be said about people that are granted that additional support through capital and they make wise decisions with it. That is something you either have or you don't have. from this conversation, what I took away from these two founders is that they were constantly pivoting, constantly coming up with new ideas, constantly evolving their business so they could make the most of that investment that people made in them, but also the investment that they made in each other.
There's really no such thing as an overnight success, is really what's clear from these conversations. And it also gets into the changing role of celebrity in fashion. Yes, you can draw a straight line between Ariana or Gigi Hadid wearing one of their outfits and it selling out, but that's not necessarily always true. I think celebrity is so fleeting, and who becomes famous overnight is really different now. And I think it wasn't just a celebrity wore my item. It was a celebrity wore my item during the height of their pop culture relevance, during a phenomenon that everybody was talking about. So I don't think it's even enough anymore to have a celebrity wear your clothes, because there's just too many celebrities now and too many brands, and attention spans are so fleeting. So I think they've been really smart at kind of creating the new version of the revenge dress. They're creating something that allows celebrities, or just people in general, like Victoria's wearing a boys' lie hoodie today, it allows them to speak without saying anything. And I think that's really powerful.
Anyone that's a Vanderpump Rules fan knows this moment, and it was absolutely iconic. It was the photo of Ariana leaving the black SUV on the way to tape the Vanderpump Rules reunion. She was wearing a two-piece yellow tracksuit that said 1-800-BOYS-LIE on it. It was just perfection.
It broke the internet. It literally broke the internet.
Absolutely. And the thing is, at this point, Ariana had said nothing. So this was her opportunity to say, hey, this is what I think about this whole ordeal that has the internet in a chokehold through clothing. And Boys Lie created that opportunity.
You can't make up that kind of marketing. You just really can't. So this episode, I think, has a ton of great takeaway. Whether you want to start an apparel brand, there's a lot of really great advice if you want to do just that. And don't worry, you do not need $250,000 to do it. They do discuss that. But also, if you're a person with a job, I think you will get a lot out of this episode, because there's a lot here about the power of just being okay with failure and acknowledging it and just letting go of things that don't work for you anymore, ideas you've tried that didn't pop off, strategies you've implemented that weren't as successful as maybe you built them up to be in your head. This is certainly something I deal with as the GM of Girl Boss. Are all of my business strategies or ideas bangers? No. And I have to constantly remind myself that I have to pivot and try again. And there's a phrase that one of them says is like, all you can really do is be better today than you were yesterday. Like, do something today that improves upon the day before. And that is just enough most of the time.
Yeah, Liz, honestly, this is such a great listen. So I am excited for you to hear this conversation. And with that, let's get into the pod. Welcome back to Girl Boss Radio, everyone. I am so excited to introduce you to Leah and Tori. How are you both doing today?
We are good, surviving another day.
Yep, you put it perfectly.
I am really excited to have this conversation with you. When the Girl Boss producers had reached out saying, we're going to be meeting with the founders of Boys Lie, I was like, amazing, mainly because I'm just familiar with your products and your epic clothing. I wanted to start at the beginning before we get into the future. What did you both want to be when you grew up?
Mine's really superficial, I'm not going to lie, but I wanted to be on reality TV. When I was younger, I was watching every show. I was watching Jersey Shore. I was watching The Kardashians. I was watching everything Bravo. And I was like, one day, I'm going to be a housewife. That was what I wanted to be when I was in high school. It definitely changed as I got older. But yeah, very superficial.
I think I've always wanted to own a clothing brand. I've always wanted to be like much more higher end than what we're at now. I was like, oh, I want to do couture. Or, oh, I want to be part of something that's super luxe. And then I worked for Tory Burch in retail for a little bit. And I was like, I'm never fucking working in retail ever again. This job sucks. And now here I am back in retail.
Retail's tough. I mean, I started my career in retail and I was managing a team of 12 people when I was 16, which is wild.
Wow.
Because like, I don't even manage 12 people now, and I'm in my 30s.
From the amount of employees that we have now, which is around 12, I feel like I've acquired 12 new personalities. The way you speak and address each individual person, whether it be on your team or even just a friend, it's always different. And it's so insane when you have 12 different personalities to manage. I don't know how people do it on a level of like 750 employees plus.
For folks that aren't familiar with Boys Lie, tell us a little bit about your brand, who you are, what you do.
So we were best friends, obviously, before we were business partners. And we came up with this term, Boys Lie, as we went through these horrible breakups. And when we decided that we wanted to do something together, we knew that we wanted to make sure that whatever we were doing was going to empower people, because that's what that phrase was to us. So Boys Lie, we'd say we were getting ready. We would say if someone screwed us over, if one of our friends got fired from their job, it was always Boys Lie, Boys Lie, Boys Lie.
And having known each other for almost 20 years now too, these words were not an inside joke, but almost like a mantra that we were growing into consistently over the years as we became closer and closer. I ended up right after college getting a job that was in San Diego, and Leah was in New York at Yelp, and it was like my last moments at home on the East Coast. And so I was like, let's go out with a bang. Let's fucking do it.
That we did.
We somehow end up wasted in a fire station in New York City screaming Boys Lie to the streets on St. Patrick's Day. And basically at the end of the night, in a very drunken, girly stoop of a moment, we were like, let's do something with this. Let's white label for cosmetics. Let's create a brand. We can do clothing with it. And from there, things spiraled. We started in makeup. We did horrible. We completely failed in makeup. We used the same business structure as Pat McGrath, where she had these merch pieces that got the Pat McGrath name, I guess, out there. She used to sell like bombers jackets. But we had our makeup and our clothing, because you can wear red lipstick and you don't essentially need to know what brand it is. It's just red. The clothing kind of became more and more popular.
We got DMs from Delilah Bell and Mingley Simmons when we were still fully mostly cosmetics, but we had the two hoodies, and they're like, where can I get this? Where can I get this? And so when we sent it to them and they ended up posting and tagging on their page, our inbox just slowly started to blow up asking, where can I get this hoodie? So Tori and I are like, okay, so no one cares about the makeup. No one's saying, hey, where can I get this lipstick? They're coming to us asking for our clothes. So we were like, we need to just change our entire business plan around and try and go into the clothing aspect of things. And thank God we did. But when we started this, we had absolutely no idea what we were doing.
We had a really crazy moment where Gigi Hadid stepped out in our clothes head to toe. But basically, when she stepped out in it, the clothes blew up overnight. And we were like, oh my God, we need to pivot to clothing immediately.
They're beautiful components, by the way. We still have all of them. So if anyone wants to take them off our hands that's listening to this, please. But I think what we really wanted to make our brand was wearing your heart on your sleeve and showing your emotion without actually saying the words of how you're feeling. So I think from there, we really built this customer base of community that they're learning how to heal with us. And we became like older sisters and therapists throughout this time too.
No, it's been cool. Not only for us have we used our different forms of heartbreak, whether that be a best friend, boyfriend, job, whatever it is, and kind of put it into the graphics and into this business that's Boys Lie and what it is today. But we've been getting it with celebrities. Again, that Gigi moment really changed our life. And that was in the height of her very public breakup. It not only gave us validation as the brand, but what the brand represented. And then we had a recent moment with Ariana from Vanderpump that was also same, where it's like these celebrities, they can't really speak out. They don't have press conferences, but they're wearing items on their bodies that represent their breakups or their healing process, saying it without having to actually say it.
So I'm kind of wanting to learn a little bit more about the behind the scenes of actually having a clothing brand and being at the stage that you're at. So what was an early learning experience that you had when starting Boys Lie?
There's a couple. I think trusting the wrong people. We had like a very specific type of budget. And when we would go into meetings, we were really naive to think that we would just soar overnight and explode overnight. And we'd go into these meetings so confident with the budget that we had rather than understating it a little bit so that we could still save some money. And people in LA just took that like sharks and ran. And that was a big learning lesson or learning curve for us on top of just supply chain and inventory management. I think having an actual product that you sell that's physical, there's a cycle of longevity that it has on the shelf, and being able to properly cycle it through is really important. Because in clothing, right, you need to make sure that you have inventory for Black Friday, for instance, for sales. And you want to make sure you have stuff for Christmas and little giveaways, all these little things that get people incentivized to purchase. It's really hard to decipher the economics of what the brand should be when you're fresh out of college. I was a creative writing major with a focus in poetry, no experience in that kind of background at all in supply chain. And Leah was communications. We had to kind of learn by failure.
So when you're buying a quality piece of clothing and you're looking at the price tag, there's a reason behind that. And so for us, when people reach out and they're like, why is this certain price point? It's because we're literally making all of our items from scratch.
As it relates to having funding, how do you navigate having the capital, especially like earlier on, to buy, obviously, a large order?
This is a great question. And I feel like we have so many different creative people in LA, especially that have reached out being like, how did you start this brand? Or how do you know what to do? Or how did you get going? The first and most easy thing about creating a brand, essentially, you have to consider how much you're going to actually spend. I'm going to be spending X, Y, and Z on a photo shoot. I'm freelancing a photographer for this amount of money. I need to buy a backdrop. Little things like that, you list out in all these expenses as to things that you need for your business. I want to make 100 hoodies. How much is that going to cost me? How long is that going to last? These are all the questions you, again, just generally ask. And by writing out all your expenses, that gives you a general gist of, okay, I know that I'm going to spend this much, so how am I going to make that back? And what is the cost of my good need to be to make that money back? We were lucky we had friends and family who gave us essentially a loan to get started. And we kind of used that loan very slowly. But again, we used it up to a point where I was like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. We're closing shop. And basically, when the GG moment happened, we exploded overnight. We got so many funds in that we were able to use that money and recycle it to continue on and put it back into the business and continue to grow.
With the friends and family loan, just for folks that are listening, like how much was that? Was it $5,000, $10,000, $50,000?
It was $250,000 given over time.
And do you think that that's what people need to start a clothing brand? Or do you think that they could start with $10,000?
I think our biggest issue, again, is that we didn't and we still don't know what we're doing like every day on a daily basis. So we're learning like trial by error type of situation. But if I started a company tomorrow that was a new brand and I wanted to call it Girls Lie, for instance, I could start that with 10 grand and we would do just fine.
Mm-hmm. And you have to understand too, when you first start your company, if you're starting a clothing business, you're going to spend, if not all of it, if you have $10,000, for example, to cover all your costs, even if you have employees, to cover the cost of production, the people that you're paying, shipping, your website, any socials or ads that you're spending with, you're going to spend a lot of money, but you're going to have to wait for that to come back. And it takes time. So it might be scary when you look at the bank and you're like, I have no cash in right now, but it flows. So like once you do get your product off, it comes in. It's just not going to come in as quickly. It's a gamble. Also, when you're designing something and you're like, I love this, I would buy this tomorrow. You also don't know if other people are going to love it as much as you do. So it's a risk, but you have to take them because you're always going to get something that's going to stick and people are going to be obsessed with it.
Yeah, you talked about having some unfortunate experiences with losing money, and I want to get into that. But I think before we talked about early learning experiences, you had said a bunch of times already, we don't know what we're doing. And I think that a lot of people are in that place. What are some things that you know now that you wish you had known earlier in your journey with starting Boys Lie?
When we first started, we were yes people. So everything that was thrown our way, yes, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Oh, a $90,000 photo shoot? Sure, that's going to make us our money back. We had no idea. So not only did we have the wrong people advising us on where to be spending our money and how to do certain things, we didn't know ourselves. So we made a lot of mistakes. Now I think what I've learned is to not say yes to everything. And saying no is kind of scary because you might be losing out on some type of business opportunity. But I think if we didn't say no to certain things that we were offered in the past, we would have not been where we are today.
I think everything's negotiable. I wish I did tell my younger self, everything is negotiable. Even if you feel like this person's saying no, if they're not willing to like somewhat compromise where both sides end up a little bit unhappy, but ultimately at the end of the day, we'll make it work type situation. Mm-hmm. You get a little bit of what you want. I think that's where I wish I knew that.
What's interesting too is the people that said no to us in the beginning are now emailing us wanting to work with us today. So we've noticed that a lot as well.
What's an example of a time that you said no to something and you're like looking back and being like, yeah, I'm really happy that we said no to that specific opportunity, whatever it was?
We had one PR team that really wanted to work with us, said that they're going to do this, this, and this for us. We're going to hit all these tiers. We're going to blow you guys up. They were very expensive. Little did we know that working with them not only was unfortunately a waste of our dollars, but they did not care about what they were saying in the initial pitch. They were not fulfilling the things that they said that they would.
We thought because they represented such huge, huge brands, oh my God, we're swimming in a pond with all these big players right off the bat. And that is just such a, again, naive learning experience to think about because literally they were just like, oh, we're just cashing a check-in from the small brand. I don't care if they exist or not.
What advice do you have for people that are starting a clothing line that are just getting started?
Just don't stop doing what you're doing. My one thing is like, one, you could be better than you were yesterday. So no matter what, that's my goal. I put blinders on and I'm just like, how can we do more than we did yesterday? I'm not comparing myself to other brands. So that's, I feel like, the first thing for Boys Lies growth alone. Mm-hmm. But also, like, you're going to constantly get kicked on your ass. You're just going to lose all day long. You're going to get doors shut in your face. You're going to get rejected. And it's kind of, how do you take that rejection? I think this brand for me has just taught me how to be a good loser. And there are very few people who know how to lose.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I would say also, if you are starting a clothing brand, when you first start, don't overwhelm your customer. So when we first started with makeup, we had all these SKUs. You know, we had 10 lip glosses, 15 lipsticks, all these different shades, highlighter, eyeshadow. It was overwhelming as a brand new brand. So if you're going to start with clothing, start with two SKUs. See how they sell. If they sell out, that's going to make it cool.
The consumer themselves, they're much more simple than that. They need one direction, one focus, one home for what they want. I wish that we had started just in the clothing alone, obviously, and you learn for a good reason. But Jerry Lorenzo from Fear of God, he only started with one hoodie. And it took him a year and a half, I want to say. I could be wrong on the time frame, but a pretty good amount of time before he released another color hoodie. So the focus point always stayed honest and organic. And it was easy for the consumer to say, oh, that's the Fear of God hoodie. That's the one that I want, because there was only one.
You listened to your consumers early on, right? I think that sometimes people have an idea, and with makeup and cosmetics initially for both of you, they're like, well, no, this is what we set out to do. We're going to keep pushing. But your consumers were clearly like reaching out and they were like, where can I get this hoodie? I want this. And you're like, okay, we got to listen. They're talking to us and asking about this. This is an opportunity to pivot. And I think with that, how do you know when to pivot?
When we had enough demand for it, we were getting all these messages too. But we also, at the time, we didn't just have clothing on deck. We had to make it from scratch too. So we had to tell everybody, hey, we don't have these units in. I know that you're all dying for them. It was Tori and I actually talking to the customers through our Instagram too. So we'd either send video messages or even just write, hey, this is Tori and Leah, or hey, this is Tori, hey, this is Leah. And they were willing to wait.
And I think just the clothing became so popular, and because we had to make it by order, like a pre-order situation, it made us kind of realize, okay, the focus really should be in clothing. It doesn't mean we're giving up. We're just trying something new.
Sometimes you can quit or fail at something, and it doesn't necessarily mean that it wasn't successful. It just means it ended. I have a friend that recently ended something, and she was like, it was still a wild success for me. And I'm proud of it. It just needed to end. And that was that chapter. And I think that that's like a really cool way to kind of approach something. Also, just like neutrality towards these moments as well. It is what it is. And it doesn't mean that it was like this catastrophic fail. Like ultimately, this is a part of your story and it led you to where you are today.
So I think while change is scary, people don't realize it's a good sense in some ways to be uncomfortable and not know what's going to happen next.
It's a really good mental health moment, what you were just talking about with your friend too, because if I were going to start my own business and I was scared of failure, hearing you say that, her being confident and just saying, you know, it is what it is. I'm still so proud of it. It just had to end. That takes away from the fear of failure, because at the end of the day, people want to see you fail. Not everyone's on your side. Not everybody is going to be rooting for your success. Our friends, even when we first started the brand, not everybody believed in us. Some of my closest friends from home thought we were going to fail.
The rumors obviously circled back. It hurt our feelings and whatnot. And we were down really bad when this also happened. But the second we started winning, it was like we all of a sudden had an arena filled with people cheering us on who used to hate us. And I feel like, again, that's a lot of people don't have this knowledge or education of knowing how to fail. And it's not something you learn in a class, because a class is just pass or fail. You get held back. You can change your major, whatever. But really, truly failing, you almost surrender to just life. And once you're able to laugh about those failures and those fears that you had, you're not afraid of anything anymore.
Failure to me is a gift, because it means you had the opportunity to fail at all. There's a lot of people that aren't even in positions where they fail at anything because they're not even trying.
Not only did we manifest without doubt and take the right actions to make it happen, we took everything that everybody was saying, like, they can't do it, they can't do it. And we were like, watch us. I will do whatever it takes. I will make it some way. It might not be this direction, but I can make like a loop and make a U-turn and figure it out.
I have like a Benemy. It's a business enemy. And I've been in probably a one-way competition with this person. since the beginning of starting my company, Bloom. And it's been such a helpful and like fun, just playful motivator. We are or were basically in competition until I got to the point where I was like, damn, like I just like rode right off the track. I'm in another race now. So this is where I don't agree with this pithy Instagram quote of like, comparison is the biggest thief of joy, because I do genuinely believe that comparison in some cases, if you're in a good mindset, can be a really great motivator for some folks.
People don't think about it even down to a product level of things. You wouldn't be wearing the headphones that you're wearing today if somebody said, how can I make this product better? How can I do what I'm doing and make it better? You wouldn't get new cars, you wouldn't get new clothes, you wouldn't get new anything if you couldn't readjust and reamplify something that has already been out there before.
Tell me a little bit about some of the challenges that you've had with capital.
We have a very big client that's in wholesale. And basically, when we got on board with them years ago, we signed a terms and conditions agreement because they were so big, and Leah and I were big yesers, that basically said if they choose to cancel their order that we already have made, they can just cancel it. So we produced all these tote bags. And they put in this huge purchase order, and Lee and I are like dancing around. We're like, finally, they ordered these tote bags, so excited. Months go by, production goes through, the bags are ready to ship from our manufacturer, and the customer's like, I don't want them anymore.
It was a really bad situation.
I was like, how am I going to sell 10,000 totes?
It was insane. It was the biggest amount of quantity of an accessory we've ever ordered in the first place. And so now we're sitting here completely screwed over with all of these units and all these different colorways left, basically like, okay, so now we're going to have to sell all of these. And that's crazy. So even going back to when you're starting a clothing brand, when I was talking about start small and don't overwhelm your consumer, that's also because inventory can kill a business. If you're sitting on thousands and thousands of units that are just not moving, that's money sitting there being wasted, depreciating over time. Most of the time, I mean, if you're lucky, which would be amazing, it might become popular again. But once it's been up on your website for weeks and weeks and weeks, people aren't coming to the site being like, oh, I want this now.
At that point, how can we, as the first time doing this, strategically make this work? What are the ways that we can create different outlets? We could have a sale for these items. We could do gifting. How much loss are we going to take on gifting to get it popular again? How many times do we need to gift it out? Could it go for an event? Could it go into other budgeting outlets where we could use it? And actually now the tote bags have sold out.
Literally the biggest nightmare I've ever dealt with. Because it's also not only that, but as you're saying, you have to get creative. If it's sitting there, not only is it wasting away, but it's taking up space in your warehouse and you're being charged for every single square foot of space.
I want to talk to you a little bit about moving units. Do you think that it's possible to grow a brand in today's day and age without the support of mega celebrities?
So the market's changing and it changes every day and you never really know what to expect. I think at the time, we were very much so graced with having a celebrity wearing our items. And that goes with Ariana too, very graced with that moment, with who it was, with the position she was in. We were really lucky. And I think now I see your Alex Earl, the D'Amelio sisters, there's like a new sense of celebrity. They have a certain type of buying power, seating celebrities. I think there's more interest now in the DIY type of situation where it's like really relatable to not be a celebrity. I feel like now the celebrity status or quota isn't matched the same to some people that are just incredibly relatable. Boys Lie had a balance. Leah and I were showing ourselves packing out these boxes in a warehouse, and that rawness of us giggling and like not even polybagging these clothing items, it made the brand really real for other people. And those same people who followed us through that were fans at that time, are now our biggest fans, some of our biggest customers that we have today.
Mm-hmm. Going off of what you're saying too about relatability, even today in this age with influencers and celebrities, just because you're looked at by millions of people on a daily basis doesn't mean people are actually buying what you're wearing. I might be following somebody, I'm not going to name names, but I love the aesthetic of their Instagram page. I like watching their family and their vlogs or whatnot, but I'm not buying clothing that's on their body. With Ariana, we had no idea what type of impact that was going to have. And it was so clear to us how much buying power that girl has because our 1-800 sold out the next day.
And it was also what she was representing. So the clothing itself with Ariana, for instance, it made a statement. With Gigi, it made a statement. And That statement is something you can't sell. That's a service. That's not just a product. So I feel like us giving that to people puts a price tag that you can't really measure. So it's more impactful.
I was actually talking about this on Instagram. If we think about some of the earlier days of like paparazzi shots, Princess Diana basically built the blueprint for this, communicating with fashion, with artifacts. No one will ever not know or remember the revenge dress post breakup.
I guess what excites me most too is that our clothes, beyond just like a revenge dress, they're not revealing. They're fucking comfortable as fuck.
I love that too, because again, her revenge dress was amazing.
Like gorgeous.
Looked unbelievable, but stepping out in, you know, an oversized sweatshirt and sweatpants too, it also just says, I don't fucking care. Look at me now.
Before we move away from this conversation about Ariana, I wanted to ask, how did that happen? How does a company like yours land the opportunity to be essentially a conversation piece and participate in this iconic moment?
We got a reach out from her stylist. My immediate doubting was like, this isn't real. No way. Is this spam? Because her email didn't actually match with the one that we had originally had. When we found out it was real, I was like, we need to put her in the most boys lie front facing item ever. So we were trying to decide which one to send. That set was the one we decided on. We didn't know if she's going to wear it or not.
Yeah, I think the other side is we've gifted so many people, so many different things. This is a very easy example, but Kylie Jenner, we've gifted her a gazillion things. And basically, just because you also send out a gift to somebody, you guys don't owe each other anything. They don't have to wear it. It's just, I hope you like this. If you like it, that's great. You wear it. If you don't, you don't.
Do you both feel like you're successful?
Yes. I couldn't have dreamed for where I'm sitting right now to be better than what it is.
It's just on a daily basis, you get so involved in everything. Sometimes it's really hard to realize all of the milestones that we've hit without actually speaking about it.
I think also we get to celebrate it more because we're best friends. And I wouldn't recommend going into business with your best friend or anybody's best friend who's listening to this. I'm really lucky that in this boys lie situation, I get to celebrate those wins with you. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't imagine doing it on my own. I've met so many entrepreneurs in LA, and I'm like, I don't know how you have reached your level that you've reached just so solo dolo. I wouldn't be able to be present ever.
Me either. I completely agree.
I'm doing it solo, and I can say that it's really hard. Yeah, it's hard. Well, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us today. I really appreciate it. Before we wrap up, where can people continue to follow along on your journey?
Our Instagram is @boyslie.
Our website is boyslieofficial.com.
And yeah, follow us on TikTok also. It's just @boyslie.
Sweet. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to my chat with Tori and Leah. If you love this episode and want to hear more from them, check out Boys Lie Podcast, where they dish on all things pop culture, relationships, and spicy story times. And come back next week for another episode of Girl Boss Radio. In the meantime, please rate this episode or leave a comment to let us know what you thought. As always, this podcast is produced by Liz Guber and Victoria Christie and edited by Diego Dominic. Until next time, keep blooming.